The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well, staying dry out there on a nasty day in the Auburn Opelika area. This is the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. November 19th, 2024. That is right. We are cruising right along through the month of November. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. And you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Glad to be here. Lots to get to on the show today. Uncle T-Bone and I had a lot of fun talking Auburn football, which we will do some more of today as they are moving on to Texas A&M, but sounds like Texas A&M may have already moved on from Auburn. Kind of crazy to think about with what's going on around college football. So we'll get some more thoughts from this past weekend. We'll continue to talk Auburn football, Auburn basketball as well, as they get a nice win last night against UNA. Also have other college basketball results to talk about from last night, games coming up tonight as well, and more college football playoff rankings come out tonight. And so with all of that, we're going to try and squeeze all of that content into just 2 hours of radio. So looking forward to that. Got a lot to get to on the show today. Phone lines are open, wide open on this Tuesday afternoon. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to us. 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And I say us because as he is with us every single Tuesday, the voice of Lee Scott Academy, Christian Griffin in the studio. What's up, my man? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Happy to be back in here with you. Happy to be inside rather than sticking it outside. Yes. I ran inside and my PB&J got all wet from trying to make it from the 20 steps from the door or from my truck to the door.
Not the PB&J.
I know. It's the biggest problem of the day. You're talking a lot of basketball. Lee Scott also on the airwaves tonight. Tiger Country 104.5. The girls will start right around 5:30. Girls, or the boys rather, right around 7 o'clock. That boys team's looking really, really good. I talked about it as we transitioned to Auburn basketball. This Lee Scott team plays a lot like North Alabama with the speed, wanting to get out into transition, not necessarily a team that wants to run a lot of set offenses. And you saw some success there with the Lions of North Alabama, especially early on or later on in the first half against Auburn.
Yeah, and that's a team that has a lot of talent, does North Alabama, and I think you saw that last night. We'll get into that in just a second, but as you mentioned, Lee Scott Academy in action tonight. You can listen to Christian on the airwaves. You said girls about 5:30, right?
Yeah, but the JV boys will be at 4, so you know, however long that goes on, scheduled for right around 5:30.
There you go. So tune in to that Lee Scott Academy girls and boys basketball, Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm back on the air tomorrow for Auburn High School basketball. We've got games tomorrow and Thursday. We got Lafayette coming back here tomorrow. We went there on, I guess, last Wednesday that was. And then Charles Henderson comes in on Thursday. So looking forward to that. A lot of our high school basketball coverage, as unfortunately, both of our football seasons are done, and so flipping full on to the hardwood, and that's what happened last night inside of Neville Arena as Auburn, the number 4 ranked team in the country, they take down UNA 102-69. We want to hear your thoughts. Shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. In a game where if you just looked at the game and watched the game and didn't look at the scoreboard, Christian, you would say Auburn did not play their best game. In just 4 games of the year, right, especially early in that game in the first half and even partway through the second half, like, this was not a game that Auburn, again, don't look at the scoreboard. If you just watched it or listened to it without any of those updates, you'd say they didn't play their best. But They put up 102 points. They hold UNA to under 70, and you get another nice win at home.
And it feels really nice to be able to say that if you didn't look at the scoreboard, you feel like you didn't play your best, and all of a sudden you look up and you beat a team by 33 points. You could definitely find more complaints, or you could find things that are a lot worse than that. But as you mentioned, UNA went on a bit of a run towards the end of the first half. Auburn responded and then kept it going into the early part of the second half. I believe it was a 27-8 run with about 15 minutes left in the second half. Started off hot, but you feel like those midweek matchups, especially against an inferior opponent, you see a team kind of settle with jump shots early rather than getting what you want inside the paint. But after about 5 or 6 minutes, Jani Brim said, all right, I'm coming back after my 2 or 3 minutes on the bench, and I'm going to establish my dominance. And that's exactly what he did, 30-17 on 13 of 17 from the field.
Unbelievable, man. Just a unit on the floor. And I had a chance to ask him about that last night in the post-game press conferences after we had a chance to talk with BP, and then we were given the opportunity to speak with Denver and Jani. And I just asked him straight up. I said, man, in a game like this, when you realize that you are the best player on the floor, what's your mindset? And he basically just said, go get it, right? Go after it. Go score. Go get a bucket. And that's what he did. And 30-17. I mean, Justin Ferguson from The Observer was reading off some stats. I mean, when he was on the floor, it was something like he was rebounding 42% of missed shots or something like that. I mean, just insane numbers for Jani. And remember, this was a game with 5 minutes to play in the first half. UNA took a lead. They were up 33-32, yeah. Right? And where Auburn started hot, UNA hung around. They made some tough shots, made some threes, made some tough layups in the lane, and took a lead 33-32. And we're thinking, wow, all right, here we go. We got ourselves a little bit of a ball game. Auburn goes up 13 at the half, and they never looked back after that.
Yeah, Jani, I believe, went on an 11-0 run himself,
by himself
after that point. What would you give to be asked that question that you asked him? Just, you know, you're the best player on the floor. What did you realize and what did you go do? I'd give a lot to be able to get asked that question.
But I will say he gave a ton of credit to his teammates because, I mean, Auburn last night as a team assisted on 25 baskets.
Yeah.
Which is really, really solid. They made 39 baskets and assisted on 25 of those.
That and only 11 turnovers in the game. So, I mean, over a 2-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. Denver Jones with 9 of them himself. We've talked about it a little bit last year. We talked about it through the preseason of basketball. Him at the one, him at the point guard running the show is going to look so, so good, and it did again last night.
Yeah, and this is only the second or third game. They haven't done it all 4 games, but him at the point guard spot has turned out to be one of the best moves so far in this young season. And you're right, we did talk about this in preseason. I wanted this to happen because of what you saw last night. 13 points, 9 assists, 2 steals, and he shot 4 of 6 from the floor, 3 of 5 from downtown, made both of his free throws, and he had 2 fouls. Because as good as he is offensively, right, even if you just take those 9 assists as 2 points per, that's 18 points he was responsible for plus the 13 that he had, right? I'm not good at math, but believe that adds up to what? 35 or 25, whatever that may be. I'm not good at math. I told you I'm
30,
not.
18 and 13 is 31, but that's given that every single one of his assists were a 2-pointer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So a few points given here and there off of threes as well. I mean, you're talking about, again, a guy that
That's 25% of the points that he was responsible for.
As the point guard.
Yeah.
Which is what you're supposed to do,
and
right?
Did,
you're supposed to shoot. You're supposed to score, but your first priority is to get people the basketball and construct the offense and conduct the offense, and that's exactly what he did.
You are the point guard of this offense. You're the one that gets everything going. You're the one that gets everybody in their right spots. And I believe there was a foul that he had that was 13 or 14 minutes left in the first half, and the announcer said that that was his first defensive foul of the year, which is absolutely insane to think about. Even 4 games into the season, regardless of who you've played, much less somebody who is up for one of the players of the year in LJ Cryer at Houston and absolutely shut him down, to think that he did not give up a defensive foul in that entire game, and he had two. He had two last night. So I mean, I guess the streak is broken. I mean, you got to play without fouling, man. Come on.
Yeah, come on, Denver. Get it together, man. That's it's unacceptable, Denver. As you pick up two fouls, ridiculous. But no, that really is an insane stat to think about, especially in today's officiating world where it's so ticky tacky and so touch foully. I mean, it's just. It's gotten out of hand at times, and it seems like officiating has gotten to one end of the spectrum or the other, where it's like, okay, first half, we're not going to let them, or we're going to let them do whatever they want to. And then second half, we're going to call everything because we got the call from HQ that said we weren't doing our jobs correctly. But then it's the other way around. It's like the first half, they call everything. Oh, but now that the game's on the line, go for it. Hack each other, smack each other, hit each other, do whatever you want to do. There's just seems to be little consistency nowadays.
There definitely is, especially it feels like it comes down to when it's down the stretch, right?
Yes.
Those final 8 minutes, and you see teams that shoot 16 free throws in the first 15 minutes of the first half, and all of a sudden you get under 5 minutes and teams are hacking each other, mm-hmm. and it's we're letting them play through physicality a little bit, and it's all right. Well, if you're a player, how do you adjust to that?
Well, there were several times last night where Bruce would turn around in pure frustration, stick his arm in the air, and smack it with his other hand, signaling for a foul, begging for a foul call, especially on his guys down low underneath. But think about this and look and listen to what these totals are. Your starting five last night of Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara, Miles Kelly, Jani Broome, and Dylan Cardwell. Just listen to these totals. These are your five starters. 30. These are your point totals now. 30, 12, 12, 13, and 12. All five starters scored in double digits. On top of Chaney Johnson with what we would consider an, quote, off night with 8. Tahad Pettiford with a, quote, off night with 7. And then, yeah, you had some of your walk-ons get in and knock down some shots at the end. But all five starters getting in double digits and then still getting 15 points from two guys off the bench. I mean, it could literally be anybody off this team that could win the game for Auburn in a big game like we're going to see in coming up in Maui.
Again, it goes back to there's so many different guys that can play so many different facets of the game, right? We said, quote, Chaney had an off game going 4 of 6 from the field in 24 minutes. He still had 8 and 5. And did exactly what he was asked to do in that night, where you weren't necessarily relying on him as much as you might in other games. But in any given night, Chaney could go for 20 and 12 if you really need him to.
Absolutely.
Or against Houston, what was it, 13 and 10 or 13 and 11, something somewhere around that
double
range
double.
Where it's just anybody on any given night. If you need somebody to step up and hit a couple big threes, it could be Miles Kelly. It could be Tahad Pettiford. It could be JP Pegues one night, that just somebody that you don't necessarily expect to be one of those ginormous difference makers. But on any given night, anybody can step up when they have the hot hand.
Let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. Ty, you're on the line. What's up, man?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
First, I'd like to give a shout-out to those walk-ons coming in the game, securing the spread for everybody that you know, might have had a little couple dollars on the game last night.
Not just, you, though, right, you know? Ty? Not you, though.
No, not at all.
Ain't no way you would have done that on a Monday night game.
Ty wasn't sweating that 29.5-point favorite when he saw the walk-ons come in when Auburn was up 30 with 2.5 to play.
Dude, that was I was like, no, please. And then when that guy hit the first three, I was like, okay, good job, Bruce, good job.
That's right.
Yeah. And then they hit, and then when the alley-oop went down, I was like, oh, they just rubbing it in now. Let's just have some fun. So, but that was awesome, you know. And I like he kept Cardwell out there with him because, like, Cardwell's like that, I guess. And I guess he wasn't a walk-on, but he kind of feels like it. He feels like that Baker Mayfield type guy that, you know, like, it really maybe didn't get a lot of hype coming in, but has made him a name and made him a spot. And,
sure.
You know, like, if you heard the announcers last night, I mean, this guy will be playing professionally somewhere doing something. I mean, you know, he might not fit in the NBA because of the way the games change where you got to shoot from outside. But, I mean, the kid will play professional basketball and make a lot of money.
Yeah, he's a great story. Dylan is an awesome dude. I've gotten to know him fairly well, and he's with us, you know, for Tiger Takes on ESPN now here on Thursdays on The Drive, and looking forward to him being back with us. And he's such a good dude, and he has earned everything that he's gotten at Auburn, and I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, and my kid, that's his favorite player on the team. That's the Jumbotron man.
That's right.
And so, and my kid, he tries to get on the Jumbotron every single game. Which is pretty cool. He was on there. We didn't go last night, but he was on the Jumbotron last Wednesday. So,
Ty, it just means you need to take off your shirt with him and start waving it around.
Oh, now look, I don't know, like, again, two years ago, he was the kid that was on the Jumbotron waving his shirt, and then they showed Caldwell on the Jumbotron.
There you go. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's why he loves them, I swear.
That's awesome.
Jacob, I got your number. I'm going to send you a video.
Yeah. Send that to me.
I will send you a video of my kid the last Auburn game he went to. You're going to love it. He was giving Albie the business because he was trying to get on the Jumbotron, and then he challenged Albie to a dance-off. I'm gonna send it to you.
Yeah, send that to me for sure.
But about real stuff, guys, man, I mean, you hate – it's almost like a no-hitter. Like, you don't want to speak the words. I mean, we are the best team in the league right now. I mean, we got – like the guy said last night, we got the best win, I think, over the bet, one of the best teams. I mean, my difference that I'm noticing, because, again, I pay attention and watch every game for the last 5-6 years, is the point guard play is amazing. It's compared to what we've had. And it's like what we've been looking for, been missing in these last couple years. You know, no knock on the kids we've had. I've liked all of them. Except for maybe that Bammer now, but other than that, I've liked all the kids and they've done a good job for us, but it just shows that, you know, this senior leadership that we got this year is just amazing. I mean, guys, we got a team full of seniors and two freshmen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's who's playing for us right now. I mean, literally, it's 8 seniors, Howard and Pettifor. And I mean, and it's just showing, and also they're jiving, they're playing. I would like to see the trash talk in the kind of, you know, like just a little bit of that. Like, but I mean, you know, that's just the kids nowadays. I'm old school.
You want to see more or less of it, Ty?
I want to see a little less, man.
Okay.
I mean, y'all are
okay.
Playing North, you know, especially from Chad Baker. I love that dude. And he's that X factor, you know, he's the one who is going to get in the fight and he's the one that's going to, like, come to the rescue of his teammate and fight the other team because of something they did to his teammate, not so much him and stuff. I love that about him. But, I mean, it's North Alabama. I mean,
right,
come on.
Let's
act like we've been there against North Alabama. Now, Houston, celebrate. And, I mean, for what they did to us a couple years ago, we up 10 and didn't lose by 20.
Mm-hmm.
Man, celebrate all you want in Houston. That's awesome.
I'm with you on
that. But North Alabama and Neville Arena, like, come on, you know, a little bit less. But I will say another thing, man, Bruce, to me, I mean, we're closing games, and Bruce, to me, is calling a little bit better game here. You know, I think that we're relying on our big men, which last year I think a lot of Auburn fans would just sit there and pull their hair out because it's like, okay, we've got, you know, 8 points in a row in the paint. We come down and shoot 3 threes in a row. And
right,
it makes
right.
No sense.
Exactly.
But, you know, again, hey, this is the thing, and I know y'all are talking about it, and I cannot wait to see what we do because we're going to play 3 games regardless, correct? I look at the bracket.
In Maui, yes.
Yeah. They play a 7th and 8th game. So you don't matter. It don't matter win, lose, or draw. You can't lose 2 and go home. You got to lose 3 and go home.
Yeah,
you know
that's right. That's right. Yeah, you're going to get 3 games regardless.
If we win that, man, not only are we the number one, you know, team, but, I mean, you got to look at we're the number one seed overall. I mean, we go in, you know, we go in with nothing to prove but just to maintain. That's the only thing I don't like with our Auburn Tigers. It don't matter football, baseball, basketball. It seems like when we're underdog, you know, we play up to the hype of being the number one team, but when we get to the number one team, we get a little big head about us and forget how to scrap and grind to get there. That's what Auburn does, is scrapping and grinding to get there. And our defense, man, that defense is serious. I don't know who can score on us. I'm excited to see us against UConn or North Carolina if we get there, to face them and what we do versus them. But yeah. I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm really excited right after that next week to us to go into Camden indoors and play Duke, an offensive team, at their place. I mean, to me, that's really going to tell where we're at and what kind of team we are and how we can face adversity and everything. But, man, these next four games for an Auburn Tiger is going to be huge. And if we walk out of here 4-0, man, I'm telling you what. You might as well look at them San Antonio flights now, baby.
Look
at here, man. Damn Eagle.
Yes,
love
sir.
Out, man.
Appreciate the call, Ty. Thank you so much, brother. You said a lot of things I was going to say and wanted to say, and everything he had right there was fantastic. I want to react to that, break some more of this down. We got to get to break. Appreciate the call, Ty. Always great to hear from you, my brother. 334-321-1390. Back after this, just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before our bottom of the hour break. We appreciate Ty calling in. Had a lot of things to say in terms of Auburn basketball, and a lot of that I want to get to, and we may continue to do that later as the show goes on. But look, Auburn basketball gets a huge win last night over UNA. They dropped triple digits, and he was talking about the standings and kind of looking around the teams in the SEC. It's still early, right? It's very, very early. I mean, we're 3-4 games into the season. There's a long way to go. But Ty's point is correct. I mean, Auburn has one of, if not the best win in college basketball already, and their other wins were not close. I mean, and you can see, right? You can see how good this team is compared to even some of the best teams in college basketball, where the depth will be a factor, the shooting will be a factor, the experience will be a factor, which is why I've said this almost has to be the year. Like, it's not fair in college basketball to say that it's a must-win championship or bust, right? Because it's so hard to win. But I do believe that if you are Bruce Pearl and you're looking at your career, you're looking at what you've built, and you look at what this team and how this team is constructed compared to what it's going to be in the next couple of years, which is a wild card. Now, they've still recruited very highly. They got another big-time recruit yesterday. Like, the young guys are going to be fine. But in this era of college sports, this type of a team and the makeup that you have is so rare that it may not be championship or bust, but you've got to make a run. You have to make a run.
It's very similar, and for different reasons, but almost what people called the Ohio State football team this year in the preseason. Again, not for the same exact reasons, but you're sitting there looking at that roster makeup going, it's hard for a team to, at least on paper, look better than what we have right now, to where, I mean, you have to make some sort of run now for Ryan Day. It probably is a championship or bust. But, I mean, as you mentioned, just every part of this Auburn team complements each other so well. Ty was talking about the defensive and the guard play being so much better than everything that we've seen. You look at the starting three guards that started last night, and arguably who we said was the best defensive guard on the team, Denver Jones listed at 6'4", Miles Kelly listed at 6'6", and Chad Baker Mazzara listed at 6'7". That is some, amazing width. I mean, the arm strength and the width and the arm reach, rather.
It's what Auburn needed.
To play on the perimeter, it's exactly what Auburn needed. And the fact that Denver Jones has done it at such a high level so far this year, so much compliments to BP, so much compliments to everybody on the staff.
And I think you got to give credit to Pettiford, too. And look, there's got to be people that say, where's JP Pegues? Why is he not playing more? And totally understandable, But when Denver's playing the way he's playing, and you're getting the production out of CBM and the starting rotation, and Pettiford's playing the way he's played in the first four games, like, look, JP, we love you, and you're going to be a really good player. You are a really good player, but it's hard to play you more minutes when the other guys are playing as well as they are. So
they are, and again, it hasn't been the type of thing where you have to rely on him. He played 15 minutes, went 1 of 3 from 3, and had 3 rebounds as well. There'll be a night where you need him.
Absolutely.
But you don't have to rely on somebody like that night in and night out.
Dan, hang on. You're going to be first up when we come back 30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Let's get to the phone lines once again. 334-321-1390. Dan, you're on the line. Thanks for holding on through the break.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing good, man. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be able to go to all the games. So I didn't go to Houston, but all the home games and the exhibition game. And you can tell across the board how much better each player has gotten. You know, I don't think anybody's digressed, but, you know, just as good as Chaney is playing, you know, one thing we didn't get last year from our power forward, he wasn't as good of a rebounder, Jalen Williams, but Chaney can rebound, and that helps so much because you got the shot blockers in there. And then, of course, he can block shots too, but just there's not going to be a lot of teams that are probably going to have a better low post game than we have, and that's something you can count on, you know, day in and day out. You know, usually those closer shots are, you know, for us right now, they almost seem like they're automatic, but they're, you know,
yeah.
But it's exciting. They haven't said anything about how long the other two guys are going to be out. Have they, the guys that got in trouble?
No, they haven't said anything officially, and they didn't play last night either. I don't know what the status is on that. I mean, maybe they start to get in Maui. I don't really know, but what if there is a bright side to it, Dan, and this isn't news to you or anybody listening or who has seen Auburn play this year. I mean, Auburn doesn't really need them right now, which is a blessing in disguise, sure, but no, I haven't seen anything about it.
Yeah. Well, you don't need them until you need them, so.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah. You kind of want them to get some practice in.
No, I agree. Jaheim Hudson and Ja'Kai Howard, they've still only played the very first game of the year.
Yeah. But, you know, like you were saying, though, when you put Denver at the point guard, and I mean, we can be such a tall team and be effective, and then we can just change it into a totally different type of team and be just as effective. But, you know, I mean, his MO is defense, and we always play good defense. So, you know, that'll keep you in every game. I mean, it's going to take for us to lose. And I don't want to get too cocky, but we're really going to have a whole bunch of people get cold at one time, which, you know, typically doesn't happen.
I think so, and I think guys getting in foul trouble, I think, God forbid, injuries. I mean, it is going to take some things like that, or another team just get really, really hot and just have a really good night. So, yeah, I think it is going to take I'm not going to say a miracle, but it's going to take a rare occurrence for this team to lose several games.
Yeah. And one last thing. I think a great thing that we are getting better at is not fouling. You know, last year there was so many games where Johnson and some of the other guys would get all these silly fouls because they were playing so aggressive. And yet right now we're able to defend without fouling. And, you know, you're not putting them on the free throw line early. And then, you know, it's hurting you late in the games. It's like it's really good that the guys can defend like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for the call, Dan. Good to hear from you, man. 334-321-1390. And, Christian, that's another good point is defensively for this team. I know you were starting to and Ty talked about it a little bit, too, with the guards. But, man, Chaney Johnson, I have to show him even more love than what we've shown him. I mean, last night, and I've seen all four games, and I've been to however many now this year, but – last night was the first time that I was like really looked at Chaney Johnson coming down the floor from the media spot that I was in, and I was like, man, he's a big dude. He is a unit. Like, you could see it last night, and maybe it was because of the guys he was going up against. I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it, but he looked like a legit basketball player that could carry his own and do whatever he needs to do, or really whatever he wants to do. And to Dan's point, I mean, you've got an Auburn team now that is willing and able to rebound at a very high rate. You're not going to see very many second, third, fourth opportunities for these teams. And then when Auburn does get the rebound, almost anybody on the team can bring it up the floor. They're willing and able to do it and can start the break no matter who has it in their hands.
Yeah, starting with your point with Chaney Johnson, last year you could see just the raw and pure athleticism that he brought to the floor, but it still looked like the game was a little bit fast. He wasn't necessarily in the right spot at all times, but this year feels like everything has slowed down for him. He knows what his role is. He knows where he feels comfortable, and he's shot the ball really, really well behind the three-point line as well, but he's got the little elbow turnaround jumper in the bag. He's a great offensive rebounder, especially. And that was the biggest thing that I was going to hit at, was what you just said. He looks like a basketball player this year. He looks like he has found himself and the game has found him. And he fits so, so well. Again, had 8 and 5 in a night where you would consider that a more on the quiet night for Chaney Johnson. This is the first time this year in 4 games that he hasn't scored double digits. That's 3 times this year. He had 3 games last year where he scored in double digits and very easily could have last night if it was needed. But again, only went 4 of 6 from the field because he wasn't necessarily that relied on it. You didn't have to go to him. It was more so him just finding his way when he did have those minutes. And then again, with the guard play and not fouling, Denver Jones is the best on-ball defender that Auburn has this year. And the fact that it took until 7 minutes into the game last night for him to pick up his first foul of the game speaks volumes to how well this team plays on ball without picking up some of those cheap fouls.
Just about 2 weeks into the season, and the latest bracketology from ESPN, there's so much basketball to be played, so don't jump in on this and just take it for everything and brag to all your other friends about this. But in the latest bracketology, thanks to what Auburn has done in the early part of the season, they've moved up. They're a 1 seed right now in the NCAA tournament. Auburn is a 1 seed in bracketology, along with Kansas and Gonzaga and UConn. Auburn is the other 1 seed in the bracket. They would have Memphis in there, Texas Tech, Marquette, Florida, Michigan, Duke, UCLA, Iowa State. I mean, some heavy hitters in that side of the bracket, but heavy hitters that Auburn's going to see already this season. And they are, again, in bracketology right now, updated this morning at ESPN.com, one of 10 SEC squads in bracketology, same amount as the Big Ten, who has 10 as well. A lot of basketball to be played, but the early respect for Auburn is there, given what they've already done and given what the potential is that they could do too.
I saw something that said that they play every team in the AP Top 25 ranked from the 5 seed to the 12 seed at some point this year, which makes it by far the toughest schedule in the entire country. Again, you've already played Houston. You're going to play possibly 2, if not 3 of those top 10 or top 15 teams in Maui this upcoming week. And then you circle that right after with a trip to Cameron Indoor. You're going to learn a lot about this team down the stretch, but I mean, you got to love what you're seeing so far.
Want to look a little bit here about what's happening in college basketball. We got a lot of college football I want to talk about today because of the playoff rankings coming out tonight. Football from this past weekend, a lot of storylines out there as well. But in terms of basketball that's going on in the college rankings, right? Gonzaga has to come and really play a good game last night against San Diego State to pull away from them on the road, 80-67. Iowa State was in action last night. Of course, that's who Auburn plays next, which is in Maui. They beat IU Indianapolis. I mean, nothing overly crazy happened last night. A couple of good games tonight and a lot of good games on Wednesday. Kentucky's in action tonight. How about Purdue and Marquette in action tonight? Number 6 Purdue, number 15 Marquette. So if you're an Auburn fan and you're looking for something to watch tonight, may want to turn on FS1 at 8 o'clock Central Time, because we know that Purdue team, Auburn's going to see them in just a couple of weeks. That's a team that just beat Alabama. Now they've got another top 15 game. That is in Milwaukee at the Pfizer Forum. So it's a neutral site game, but it should be a really, really fun matchup between Purdue and Marquette. Top 15 matchup, and again, one that Auburn fans, I think, should keep their eye on.
They definitely should. And did you hear the news outside of Bud Walton Arena, last night with Coach Calipari almost begging fans to buy tickets and come to the games?
Really?
Which is something that you would not have expected to hear against an Arkansas team that's ranked 20th in the country right now with, again, Coach Cal, his first year with the Razorbacks, but almost showing frustration a little bit right now. And, I mean, social media is trying to figure out why they can't get people to come watch their games right now.
I'll say it out loud, not even about Arkansas. I'll call Auburn fans out. I was there last night. Monday night, 8 o'clock. Yes, I know it's a Monday night at 8 o'clock, and I know it's UNA. There were 2,000 empty seats last night inside of Neville. Easily 2,000 empty seats. And anybody that was there, shoot me a text. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. I mean, there were 2,000 at least empty seats for a top 5 basketball team at home on a Monday night. Like, I don't get it. And
for a team that won't be home in, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks?
That's what I said yesterday. This is an Auburn team that's going to play at home once in the next 4 weeks. They're going to play Richmond at home because then they've got Maui next. They don't play until next week. Well, they don't go to when they go to Maui. Then their reward for that is going to Cameron Indoor. Then they come back and play Richmond before they go and play Purdue and they play Ohio State. Like, this team is playing at home, other than yesterday, one time in the next month.
Until December 17th against Georgia State.
Like, come on. So, Arkansas's not the only one. Auburn fans love to make fun of Alabama for not filling their arena, because I know it's an airplane hangar, I get it, but Auburn fans have no room to talk. If you're not going to show up and watch Auburn basketball inside of your own arena, then you have no room to make fun of Bama, Arkansas, Kentucky, anybody. Because those fans, whether they show up or not, Auburn fans aren't showing up either. So I just want to put that out in the world, because I just don't think that's acceptable. Honestly, I mean, if you're going to make fun of Arkansas for their head coach at least trying to get fans in the arena,
yeah,
then you've got to show up and support your team, a top 5 team in the country, right? Auburn fans love to tell me that, oh, I remember the days when they were terrible. You could buy tickets for $5, and we should be grateful for this team and what we have. Well, we're so grateful that we give up 2,000 empty seats on a Monday night. So take that for what it is. Sorry. I mean, it's the truth, man.
Makes it to where average fans can't get the tickets. If you can't go, give them.
Give them away. Like, I mean, and I've got buddies in Fayetteville that are trying to do that. I got my radio friends in Fayetteville and just outside of there that are like, man, if you can't go, give the tickets to me and I'll disperse them. Like, I have friends that are saying that in Fayetteville, and maybe we should start doing that. I don't know, because, I mean, it's unacceptable. And this will be a hot take, too. Didn't know we were going down this road. But I've said this since I was in college at Auburn, right? Across from the student section, where it's the scholarship seating, right, where half of them don't show up either, at least half of them don't show up, and it's those nice fancy cushioned seats that they don't show up for, sell them or give them away. Or you know what? Take those seats out and make that general admission. Make that GA. Because if you're not going to show up, I don't care that you paid $50,000 for it. You being at home doesn't do any good for the game itself.
There's got to be a way to track, like, your ticket, and, you know, if you've got to hit 75% of the games,
sure,
to keep something or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and again, even if you – which that doesn't make any sense to me either. It's like, you're paying all this money to have these tickets, and yet you're not going to go? Like, why would you not at least – if you're not going to go, why not sell it and try to make a little money off of it just from a business side? Like, you're just going to throw that money away? And I guess – and I know people that have the mindset of, well, I don't want to sell it to an opposing fan. You know what? I'd rather an opposing fan sit in that seat than nobody sit in that seat. That may be a hot take, I don't know, but I hate when you've got Auburn fans who are like, oh, look at Bama, they can't even fill up their arena, their airplane hangar, look at Coach Cal, he's having to beg people to go. And I saw several times last night, And I told the people I was sitting with in the media where Bruce Pearl, at the end of the first half, has to get up, is jumping up and down and waving his hands and begging people to stand up and clap for his team. Begging them to cheer them on and send them into the locker room. But yet, they want to make fun of other fan bases for not showing up or supporting their team. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Seems like calling the kettle black, does it not?
Boom.
Take our final break. Hour number one. We'll come back, wrap it up. We got a lot of football to get to as well. A couple of the texts as well. We will wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. This is On the Line. And Christian, you wanted to get into something a little bit today, and we'll carry this into hour number two for sure. But it's about SEC football standings as we do kind of transition onto the football side of things. Again, hour two, we've got a college football playoff talk we need to have, more reactions to Auburn beating ULM and Texas A&M and Mike Elko being in the news for the wrong reason. So all that in hour number two. But what do you have on your mind in terms of the current SEC standings? Because we know they're pretty wacky.
We are. They definitely are. And it's kind of a giant race to the top. But Lane Kiffin, who must be a big fan of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, which is something that we have talked about throughout the entire offseason. We talked about it throughout the entire summer, and we brought it up a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but it hasn't ever gotten really any big media attention or gone anywhere past, I guess, this radio station. But it's Lane Kiffin. You know how all of the coaches say that they have a big group message together. Mm-hmm. He says that he revealed that there are coaches that are now beginning to talk about not wanting to play in the SEC championship due to the college football playoff format.
God, I hate when I'm right.
I mean, it's just, I'm telling you, when I'm right. He must go back and listen on the podcast. He must go back because, I mean, we've
talked. He must have ESPNAU.com saved in his phone.
I'm telling you because, I mean, it is exactly what we have talked about. He said, quote, "I've talked to other coaches, so I'll just kind of give you the feeling from some other coaches that they don't want to be in it," referring to the SEC playoffs or referring to the SEC championship, saying, you know, the risk reward to get a bye versus the risk to get knocked out completely. It's a really, really big risk.
It's not advantageous anymore. You don't gain anything by getting to the game. The only thing you gain is by winning it, but you're taking your chances of losing. Now, there's a big crowd, and my buddy Chris Phillips of SEC Unfiltered, I was talking to him about this the other day. He said, and he has been on this pedestal, he said, look, the loser of the SEC championship game will not be eliminated from the playoffs. He firmly believes that. He believes that the loser will not be left out. I don't know. I can't firmly say yes or no because we've yet to see if that's the case.
And we have no explanation of what the true format looks like, what the punishment is for something like that. There's no way that you could tell me that you would feel 100% positive that, say, it was Ole Miss that goes to the SEC championship and Texas is right behind them and they aren't playing, that Texas would be a higher rank and would possibly jump Ole Miss in the playoff rankings.
It comes back to what will the playoff committee credit more, making the SEC championship game or losing the SEC championship? I mean, what will they take into account? Will you get more credit for making it or more discredit for losing it?
Which is such a crazy statement that you even have to think about being the reality, but it very, very much is.
And then if these coaches are really thinking about it, which I find it hard to believe that going into a game week, it's like if you're Texas A&M, you're not going into the Auburn game this weekend thinking, you know, if we lose this game, then we don't have to play in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, we'll prepare, but if we happen to lose, wouldn't be the end of the world. Like, no, these guys are born, bred winners, man. They're competitors, and they want to win at all costs. Like, I don't think they're going in to 2 weeks like that because that is borderline corruption.
Right, but going into week 14 and you have the top two teams and you had a team that's, you know, sitting right around the fourth or the fifth spot that has the best regular season record, we talked about it during the summer. You're going to have it to where the SEC championship in a couple years is the third seed and the fourth seed finishing in the SEC because they want, they want that win to try and boost them into the playoff.
Yeah, because the top two teams, the only thing you get right now by winning the SEC championship game is the automatic bye. Right. Is getting one less. You get one less game in the college football playoff, but that extra game that you're missing out on is the one that you're playing in the SEC championship game. So you're not really gaining a whole lot. And that game is played on neutral site where you'd have a chance to play that extra game on your home field in the first round of the playoffs. So tell me what is the advantage of going to the SEC championship game? Because, oh, it was cool in the 70s. We competed for SEC trophies. Like, who gives a crap? Nobody wants that anymore.
And arguably, the SEC championship is supposed to be tougher than the first round game that's on your home turf.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to play Georgia in the SEC championship game in Atlanta where you're going to be outnumbered? Or do you want to play Boise State at home? You tell me.
At 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
In a night game at your home place.
On a Saturday night. You tell me. Like, which game would you rather play where you get credit for making a playoff, you get all the coverage, you get all the hype, you get all the money, you get all the funds, or do you want to play in a neutral site game that nobody cares about where if you win, cool, congratulations, here's a pat on the back, here's your participation trophy, and if you lose, you could be left out of the playoff altogether.
Or think about it to where even if you have a quote-unquote lock to the SEC or to the college football playoff, but you're sitting at a 7 or 8 seed to where you're most likely going to host the first round, then you decide to play in the game and for some reason you lose it, and say you get blown out by Georgia, whoever it may be, the committee could then punish you, and then you're still in the playoff, but you drop from the 7 seed to the 10 seed, and now you're having to go on the road.
Which they're not supposed to do. They're not supposed to do that.
Aren't they not supposed to do a couple things that
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to, you know, defend themselves and actually answer tough questions and have explanations for what they do. But
the caviar was great.
Yeah, it was. The champagne was expensive, I'm sure. I'm sure it was. Well, lots more talk on that coming up in hour number two because we've got playoff rankings coming out tonight. Plus, we already had some big results from this past weekend that we need to talk about, too. And then, as I mentioned, A&M, are they overlooking Auburn? Are they more worried about Texas? We'll talk about all that and more coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 19th, 2024, as we get underway here in hour number two on the line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, be sure to go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We talked a lot of college basketball in hour number one. Christian Griffin and I did talk in Auburn basketball as they beat UNA last night. I got some great phone calls about Auburn basketball as well. Looking around some big scores from last night. Big game coming up tonight that Auburn fans need to keep an eye out for. So be sure that you go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We just take the audio posted for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com. So all of that was in hour number one. I want to talk some more college football here in hour number two, as we began to get to that at the end of the hour with the SEC standings and college football playoff and the rankings coming up tonight, our next set of rankings with two and three games to go, right? We've got a couple of games, a couple of weeks left in the college football playoff, or I guess the college football season, plus your conference championship games as well. And then I do want to talk Texas A&M a little bit and get your thoughts a little bit too, Christian, on ULM. So a lot to get to here in hour number two, and we're about to get to the phone lines, which are open here in the second hour of the show, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Got a text in there that we're going to get to about Texas A&M as well. But before we get to the phone lines, want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the 3 to 4 o'clock hour each and every day here on ESPN. Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390, and we've got Joe. You're on the line. What's up?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Listen, I wanted to ask you a question about a SEC game that was played earlier this year.
Okay.
The one between Tennessee and Arkansas, in which Tennessee suffered its first loss of the year.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, at the end of the game when I was watching it, the announcer said that Tennessee allowed Arkansas to score. And I thought that was very unusual for an announcer to say that, even if it was true.
I'm trying to recall exactly what it is that you are talking about, because you look at this game, right? Arkansas was up 3-0. Then the third quarter went crazy, 14 points for Tennessee, 7 for Arkansas, and I mean, maybe referring to the fact that Tennessee was trying to get the football back and maybe let Arkansas score late just to give themselves more time to score. Is that right?
Well, as I recall, toward the end of the game, Arkansas was driving. And they were behind, but they were about to run out the clock and kick a field goal and win, or score a touchdown and win. And the announcer said that Tennessee allowed Arkansas to score so they could get the ball back with some time left. And I was just wondering if you remembered that.
I'll be honest, I don't. Christian, do you remember that in particular?
I do. I remember it being like a little zone read, and the Tennessee defender almost carried the Arkansas running back into the end zone. And
right.
I think that was, again, it was because Tennessee was out of timeouts, and at that point Arkansas had the ball at right around the 10-yard line. And I think it just becomes one of those scenarios where you almost trust your offense to go down and try and score a touchdown rather than keeping it on the hopes of the field goal kicker, you know, shanking a field goal as time expired.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that decision cost Tennessee the game?
I don't know if it cost them the game. I'm looking at it now. They were down by, or Tennessee was up by one, right? So, I mean, they're up 14-13
exactly.
At the time. And so you have a lead, which I think is a little bit of a different conversation than if you're losing by...
Or even if it's a 14-14.
Sure, game. Yeah. I mean, that's ballsy, man. That's really gutsy to keep it straight with you, Joe. I mean, that... I don't know if it cost them the game. I'm not a fan of giving up a free score, especially to give them the lead when you have the lead. But to what Christian said, I think he makes a good point. With Tennessee, as crazy as it sounds, with that defense, though, they basically said, hey, we trust our offense and want to give them the best chance to go win it for us rather than, hoping we can block a 25-yard field goal.
Exactly. Well, the strategy, whatever it was, didn't work, and it cost Tennessee a win, which, and now they're in danger of being knocked out of the playoffs.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the numbers and the analytics said at that time. I mean, analytics are so big nowadays, and the coaches have all of that at their disposal. I mean, they've got all the formulas and everything at the tip of their hand. I mean, I'm curious in that moment what the analytics said to do. I highly doubt it said, hey, let them score, but I'm curious on what the percentages were if you did let them score, if you tried to play defense, whatever the case may be.
Okay. Well, I just thought I'd bring that up because I haven't heard anybody talk about it, and I thought it would be a pretty hot topic. And I appreciate it a lot, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Great, great conversation and a unique perspective, one that I don't think we've talked about or really anybody has talked about. And it's one of those several situations, and again, appreciate the call, Joe. It's one of those situations where they don't happen often in sports, right, Christian? But it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thing where it's like, okay, what do we do? It's a bad decision either way, right? There's a chance you could lose in either scenario, but which one gives you the better percentage to go on to win the game in however much time is left?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword where you feel like you're almost standing on either side of it, or in this case, your offense is on one side and your defense is on the other, and for some reason, which, again, is one of those situations where if it worked, Heupel would have been praised for allowing them to score to where, again, this was the game that Tennessee got all the way down to the 20-yard line, and then Nico Amialava.
Tried. Nico.
Amialava.
Sure.
I believe that's close enough.
Amialava.
But ran out of bounds on the final play of the game, but it got down to the 20-yard line and made it to where if they would have scored, they would have won the football game and would have looked like a genius.
Yeah.
So Heupel chose to trust his offense in a minute and a half to go down and score rather than kicking a field goal. But it brings up a really, really good point for the fact that it wasn't a situation to where Tennessee would have, you know, allowed the touchdown or, you know, forced the field goal, but Tennessee could have gone down and kicked a field goal. You still needed 7 to go and win the football game.
Yeah. I mean, think about all the situations in, shoot, just the last 2 decades in big-time sporting moments where those 50-50 plays where if it works, yeah, you're a genius. If it doesn't, then, oh, you're the laughingstock of the sport, whatever the case may be, right? Super Bowl, NFL, I mean, MLB, right? It's like, okay, do we intentionally walk this guy, right? It's like, okay, here comes Shohei Ohtani with runners on first and second, but we got 2 outs. Do we intentionally walk one of the greatest hitters we've ever seen in hopes that it works out? I don't know. You tell me, right? It's the same exact situation.
Or at that point, it would even be walking Shohei with the bases loaded when you're up by 2. You're giving up a run.
Yeah.
Hoping that Freddie Freeman grounds into a double play to end the game.
Which, you know.
What did he do in the World Series?
Yeah, I don't think he hit into a ground ball.
Especially with the bases loaded. Did he do anything good?
Yeah, I think he did okay. I think he did something. I think Gibby would be proud of him.
Yeah,
right?
I would say so. But again, it just makes it to where the analytics really would bring up a really good point to see if it was at the point of, rather than hoping that Arkansas goes and messes up, you put yourself in a position to where it's then on you to go and win the game.
Which I would rather be in. I would rather be in the position to let it give my team the chance to go win it.
Which is weird because, again, you were talking about it. You don't want to give up free points, but then if it makes it to where then the game is in your hands rather than I have one timeout and I'm going to let Arkansas bleed all, you know, 64 seconds of the game and try and kick a 27-yard game-winning field goal.
Yeah, and a one-point game, 14-13, I mean, I guess that – as crazy as it sounds in this situation, a one-point game doesn't change a whole lot whether you're winning, losing, or tied because a field goal wins it. A missed field goal loses it. A touchdown wins it or loses it. You know what I'm saying? Like that in itself is – then when it really starts getting weird is when you start talking 6, 7, 8-point deficits and leads and things like that. You're starting to talk about 2-point conversions, which Arkansas missed on this touchdown, by the way. They missed a 2-point conversion. So, yeah, Tennessee scores a touchdown. If it's at the end of the game, they may not even have to kick the PAT if the time ran out because the game would have been over type of thing.
It's also really weird to think about when you throw in the factor of I want my offense to go and win it. We only put up 14 points in the entire game, and all 14 points were in the third quarter. It wasn't like it was, at this point, a 45-43 game, and you allowed them to score where your offense is rolling and things have just been clicking, and you don't feel like the defense can stop you.
Which has been the issue with Tennessee all season long.
Right. The offense hasn't really, and especially in this game, never really got into any sort of rhythm. I mean, they had the 42-yard pass that set up everything within the final minute, but anything other than that, I mean, I don't feel like there were too many people that you would go ask a Tennessee fan, how much confidence do you have in your offense right now to go win you a football game? I don't know if you would there, if there'd be a lot of them.
And to his point, I mean, that game could come down to Tennessee making or missing the playoffs, which is wild because they've got UTEP and Vandy. I mean, if they win out, they're not in the SEC championship game. They still have to win out, and then they're going to be looking around and saying, well, hope we get in. Hope they like us. Hope they think we're pretty enough. Hope they like our personality. Hope they think that our accolades are good enough in this beauty contest that we're in. And hope that I told the right funny joke when I stepped on stage and they put us in the college football playoffs.
They currently sit in the fourth place standings right now in the SEC. They're 8-2 overall, 5-2 in the SEC, but have Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina lurking behind them. It could be very, very interesting to see where they would put Alabama versus Tennessee, considering
come on.
Considering Tennessee beat Alabama, does that win mean no? I mean, that would be the argument if they finished with the same record.
Since when have they showed us that wins and results matter? Like, since when have they? And look, I've heard a lot of this in recent days about the Big Ten, about Penn State, about Indiana, and I totally get it in terms of, do we really think, when you look at this, that Penn State and Indiana and other teams like them, would you put Penn State and Indiana against Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, or Tennessee and give them a chance to win realistically? No. I mean, most people would pick, let's take Penn State against Alabama. Who wins? Alabama. Yeah. Against Georgia. Who wins? Georgia. Ole Miss, probably Ole Miss. Tennessee, probably a pretty good game. That'd probably be a pretty good game. So let's say Penn State would go 1-3 versus those four. Indiana, I think that's a wild card, but I think they would have a chance.
Yeah.
I think with their defense, they would give Tennessee a run. I think they could give Ole Miss a run because we've seen what good defenses do against that Ole Miss team. Heck, they lost to Kentucky and Oxford. Like, give me a break. Georgia, Alabama, maybe a different beast. But the conversation is not about who we think the best are. That's not what this is about. And this is the whole core problem with the college football playoff yet again. Here we are, even in an expanded playoff, the same problems still remain. If you want to rank these teams and make a college football playoff bracket based off of who you think the best teams are, don't play the games. Base it off recruiting rankings. Base it off who pays the most money and who got the best transfer portal class. Rank the teams, put them in a bracket, and we'll see you in December. We'll play based off of that. Because if the results aren't going to mean anything because you think or you believe or you would bet on Alabama to beat Indiana or beat Penn State or beat Notre Dame, well then, why do we play? If you think they're better, then to heck with everything else, let's just put them in because I think they're better. I think they're the better team, and my thoughts are better than yours. I'm more important than you.
Imagine what the Big 12 standings would look like if that were the case. It would be almost flip-flopped.
Yeah. Because
Utah was the favorite to win the Big 12. Now all of a sudden, it's a competition between Colorado, BYU, and Arizona State.
Because that's what everybody had predicted.
Yeah, right. That's what everybody had. Not them in the middle or the bottom of the pack. I'll tell you what. Going off of Tennessee, I bet you they are the biggest Auburn fans this weekend right now with Texas A&M sitting right above them in the standings. Good thing is Texas A&M's not overlooking Auburn, right?
No. They're totally prepared, totally focused, including Mike Elko, who said that today during his press conference. We'll dive into that and what that means coming up when we come back. Just underway, hour number two here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Hugh Freeze, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and yeah, you like that? As we continue on here on the show, you mentioned something as we were going to break, and it's a clip that is starting to spiral around and circulate around social media right now with Texas A&M's head coach Mike Elko. His weekly press conference today where he was talking about Auburn, right? Was he talking about Auburn?
I think so.
He was supposed to be.
He was supposed to be. A reporter basically asked him, everybody has circled the November 30th game where, again, Texas and Texas A&M are playing for the first time in over a decade. But was asked, how do you keep your focus and how do you keep these guys focused with the current game that's upcoming on your schedule rather than looking ahead? And he basically, along the lines of, said, you know, sometimes that's why you play the big games early in the season. It allows you to focus on the task at hand. And said a couple other sentences and then said, quote, our focus is single-handedly on Auburn. End quote.
You didn't mess it up. That's exactly how it said.
Our focus is single-handedly on Auburn.
Look, mistakes happen, especially in front of a microphone. And for guys like us, we get it because we talk into microphones every single day.
Yeah.
But, man, it's those situations where it's really hard to escape the allegations. It's really hard to escape the narratives that were already out there, which I'm sure he has been trying to avoid this entire time. The first two days of this week, there's no doubt that Texas A&M has been trying to keep their focus on Auburn. Because put yourself in their position for a second. Like, you're in a really prime position to compete for the SEC, make it to the college football playoff, and everything is in front of you. That includes a revival or a renewed rivalry game against Texas next week. One of the biggest games of the season in college football. We were hoping that was going to be the case preseason, and as long as everything goes the way that it's supposed to, that will come to fruition. It's really hard to not look ahead to that game. We talk about the classic look-ahead game all the time, but this is a legitimate definition of that and prime example of that. And whether he screwed up or whether they're really focusing on Texas and not giving a crap about Auburn, I don't know. But that's a slip up that's hard to come back from.
It is, and it makes it to where you want to give the benefit of the doubt, especially, again, because of what we do and how many times a mistake can be made, especially when you mention Texas two or three sentences before. But
and how much weight your voice carries, man.
Exactly. It goes back to it. But you want to talk about the epitome of a look-ahead game or possibly the definition of a perfect spoiler game for Auburn.
Yeah.
That is quite literally what the meaning is. I mean, when there is a big game right before arguably a team's biggest game of the season where they're looking to do something that program has been made fun of not being able to do over the past handful of years with Jimbo Fisher and the excellent recruiting classes and being unable to break any allegations of going 7-5 or 8-4 and being able to make that next step. They have the ability to do that this year, does Texas A&M. And if you're Auburn, you have the perfect ability to play spoiler going back to it. I mean, if you're a Tennessee fan, you're the biggest orange and blue Auburn fan possible this weekend, because there are still so many things that can get mixed up. When you're looking at the SEC football standings, Texas is alone right now at 9-1. They're 5-1 overall in the conference. Again, Texas A&M is also 5-1, but they're sitting at 8-2. So that game, again, could possibly have really, really big implications. And then Georgia's at third. Tennessee is fourth. But 9-1 at Texas, and there are 5 8-2 teams in the SEC with two games left.
And it's just so complicated because there's still so many options. And Auburn, as much fun as it would be to get to a bowl game, and I know I've kind of, you know, poo-pooed on that or whatever, but I mean, Auburn could still get to a bowl game, but could still play spoiler, not once, but twice. And you could do it to a team in a game, in a series that has been so just weird since these two teams have started playing, Auburn and Texas A&M, and then you could do it to Alabama, which that would be their third loss. I get it. And that would, we've joked that they would be still in the playoff conversation, but given how this has started to play out, I think we can hopefully get off of that train and say, if Alabama were to lose to Auburn in the Iron Bowl, I don't think they would be in the college football playoff. So,
and as much as it hurts to say, how bad would the media take that as a very bad loss for Alabama and for A&M, for that matter?
To lose to Auburn?
To lose to Auburn, which hurts to say,
yeah.
But it would look like a very, very bad loss on your resume.
I mean, it's not a good loss by any means. I mean, especially if you're Alabama, if you let Auburn walk into Bryant Denny and do that. Like, that's not one. And remember how you and I have talked about recency bias, right, and how games at the end of the season should count more than games at the beginning of the season. For Texas A&M, I mean, you go to the playoff committee and you say, our first season or our first loss of the year was against Notre Dame, who is currently a top 10 team. Like, they've stayed good all year long, at least stayed relevant all year long. We should not be punished as hard as some of these other teams who have lost other types of games. Now, their other loss was to South Carolina, who is still fighting for relevancy. They're a top 20 team now. But yeah, for Alabama, you lose to Auburn in the Iron Bowl next week, and your season may be done, A, because of the third loss, but B, to who it was to. You're absolutely right.
You're looking at, I'm over here looking on, playing with the ESPN playoff predictor machine.
Oh boy.
And it has it to where if Auburn were to beat Texas A&M and then Texas A&M were to beat Texas, you know, we talked about it to where if they make the SEC championship and they lose it, it shouldn't punish them. So you go through those two games, and then the third question is, will Texas A&M win its conference championship game? There's yes, no, and doesn't make the game. You want to know what gives them a better chance of winning of the three options other than yes?
Oh, I have a bad feeling.
If they says they know they do not win, they have a less than 1% chance to make the playoff. If they don't make it, it's a 7% chance.
That's
which,
so
again,
dumb.
Is not a lot, but the fact that, again, not even playing in the conference championship game gives them a better option to make the playoff.
Tell me that's not a broken system.
Or if Texas A&M, here we'll see, if Texas A&M beats Auburn but then loses to Texas and they don't make it, it would give them a 5% chance. But if they lose, it would be less than one. Like, here is telling us to not play in the game if you're Texas A&M,
exactly
if you were to make it.
Saying. That's exactly what it's saying.
Like, it's crazy the fact that it's exactly what it's telling you to do, and it's finally coming to the lights with SEC coaches because, I mean, again, Texas A&M currently sits with a 13% chance. South Carolina with a 12% chance right now as well.
To make it?
To make the playoff.
What's their best path according to that?
I mean, they'd beat Wofford and then they would
Clemson.
Beat South Carolina.
No, you're talking about South Carolina.
Sorry, they would beat Clemson.
Yeah.
Good call. So it would say that they automatically would not make the SEC championship game.
Sure.
But they'd still have a 34% chance to make it.
As a 9-3 team with wins over Clemson, A&M, and Missouri.
They would be predicted an 11 seed.
Talk about a team you don't want coming to your house for the first round of the playoffs.
You know where they'd go, according to this? South Bend. They'd go to Notre Dame.
Ooh, the Fighting Irish don't want to see Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks. Are you kidding me? Oh, my gosh. What a crazy game that could be. It won't happen, but it would be awesome. It would be incredible to see. Speaking of all that, Auburn can play spoiler. And as we said, apparently Texas A&M's just not too worried about it because anybody in Aggieland right now, all they could talk about is the Longhorns. We got more on that when we come back. 30 more minutes on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Hang around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. He is Christian Griffin. And just tons more to get to in terms of college football with the new playoff rankings coming out tonight. And again, there are, you know, there's still a couple of more weeks left of college football. And so it's hard to dive into the rankings that we get tonight and take them for everything, because they're not everything. I mean, there's still a lot to be played out here, including Auburn and Texas A&M. And I don't want to do a full switch over yet because we normally save that for Wednesdays or the day that we kind of flip the page, right? And we're going to get some of Christian's thoughts from this past weekend against ULM. But not only did Mike Elko have a little slip up today in his press conference, I'm getting told from people that are kind of tuning around the Texas A&M radio landscape and podcasting world that there's nobody talking about Auburn. They're all talking about Texas, including my buddies over at Texags, who I'm very, very cool with and need to get with my guy David Nuno over there. Seems like everybody's just so hyped up and excited, and understandably so, for Texas next week. They seem to not have any concern with Auburn here and Jordan-Hare this weekend.
Goes right back to the point that we talked about where, I mean, this is the picture-perfect setup scenario for Auburn to play spoiler. And again, I know we're kind of moving on. You could make a whole entire episode about this whole ESPN, the playoff predictor format and everything. I was playing with it throughout the entire commercial. But yeah, nobody's even given Auburn a thought right now, which if you're an Auburn fan, you're listening right now. I feel like a majority of you all said, well, it's probably a good thing at the exact same time, because it feels like that's when Auburn has actually come out and performed really, really well, when nobody except the people inside the Auburn walls are giving them even a shot in the dark.
Oh, I saw the video today on Twitter or X where, and it said, last time Auburn played Texas A&M and Jordan Hare, and it was the Cadillac. Run out of Cadillac with Cole Kublik interviewing him, and you know, he asked him, I mean, everybody's seen it and heard it at this point, but it was Cole saying, you know, this tradition was something that was happening when you were a player at Auburn. Why'd you feel it was important to bring it back? And, you know, Caddy was talking just, you know, this is Auburn, man, and he said, this is what we do. This, you know, we play for Auburn, and then at the end he said, let's go play ball. Let's go play ball. And then they take off and just, I mean, absolutely get after it. And one of the craziest environments that I've ever been a part of inside of Jordan-Hare. I mean, that was one of the most special games in Auburn history. It is unfortunate that Auburn has yet to build from that, because it's still, I'm not going to say dark times, but not good times. It's not as dark as the end of the Harsin days were. There's no doubt about it. That was the darkest time, I think, in the history of Auburn football.
You're at least beginning to see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Are
supposedly
you? Are you? That's a loaded question.
I mean,
that's a very loaded question. And not to get into that, I guess, super much right now, but I saw that video again today, and it's just, I mean, it still gives you chills. That was such an emotional moment for him, and you know, they had fought so hard, what, Mississippi State the week before, and couldn't get that, but then they come home, and they got A&M, and it's two teams that are just not good, right? But it was one of the craziest environments you've ever seen in college football, and that's the last time that A&M walked inside those walls.
And that was such a cool environment and such a cool scene as well, because I made the trip to Starkville the week before and covered that game when I was with Weagle with Auburn Student Radio.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was able to sit at that game and watch how that game went down.
It's
and
a
how
cool moment.
Mississippi
as a student.
State
yeah.
went up big, and then Auburn made the march late in the third quarter,
you
early in the fourth
it,
quarter.
Right? Yeah.
It was just continued to build, and being able to, because again, where we sat was on the home side, so I got to watch the entire Auburn team and
That's
the entire
cool.
crowd on that far side the entire game. And just something so, so special about it. I wrote an article about it, and I was telling everybody, I think the end of it was, be there this Saturday. You do not want to miss what Jordan-Hare will look like next Saturday. And to be able to be a part of the week before, go to the post-game conference and him talking about the team, and then to see that environment, see the video, and just obviously walk away with a win and one of the coolest moments in Jordan-Hare Stadium. It was really, really cool to be a part of.
And again, I hate that Auburn has not been able to build off of that at all. And I felt
like that was almost the
we're going to be okay.
The immediate 180.
Yeah, you really did feel like we're going to be okay. Yeah. Auburn's going to be okay. Auburn is going to figure a way. They're going to figure it out. They're going to find a way. And then, right. you know, you hire Hugh Freeze and you bring in this guy, the offensive guru, the offensive genius, which I think we need to stop using that when Auburn hires new coaches, because that hasn't gone our way. And so you bring in this guy and you're hoping he's going to get it turned around. You're hoping for that. You know, Auburn fans had that slight hope of the magical year one that we've seen at times, right, under Auburn head coaches with his buddy Gus and things like that. And, I mean, heck, you've seen other Auburn coaches in recent history in the last 25, 30 years who have had really good year ones. And you were hoping for that, and it didn't happen. But you saw the change off the field, right? You saw the momentum off the field change, and you saw the success off the field change, and you've continued to see that. And I think this carries into a topic from earlier today that we have yet to talk about, where you are seeing guys transfer away from other programs week after week after week. And this question was asked of Hugh Freeze yesterday at the presser. I asked him the exact same question the week before about when do you start recruiting your own roster? At what point in the year do you do that? And he said, oh, it's already happened. Like, it's already happening. And you started to see that sort of mindset change at Auburn in the last 2 years. I mean, think about that. It's been 2 years since that Caddy game against Texas A&M. And it would be wrong to say that Auburn hasn't gotten better, that Auburn hasn't grown since then, but the results on the field are still not better. I mean, the results on the field are still not anywhere near where they need to be, but does any Auburn fan feel that Auburn hasn't gotten better since the last time the Tigers and the Aggies went at it in Jordan-Hare?
It's hard to say. I mean, no.
Right? I mean, they've gotten better. The program has gotten better. Not as quickly as we wanted it to. Not as drastically as we wanted it to. And maybe not even in the particular ways that we wanted it to. But recruiting has gotten better. NIL has gotten better because it's really ramped up in that time.
Right.
And as crazy as it sounds, Auburn is not dealing with a major transfer portal problem yet.
No. Well, that's what we were. Yeah, we were talking about it because there were more guys today. There were a couple kids, or at least one across the state that just officially entered your name into the transfer portal, which is such a weird saying considering the portal is quote unquote closed. Right now, like, what does that mean? I can't enter it, but I'm going to
prepare to enter.
So what are
you going to do? Go in hibernation to prepare for it?
Like, as soon as midnight hits, I'm just going to click enter, and all of a sudden, my name is going to pop up to where coaches can reach out to me.
Yeah, but nobody's going to reach out to you between now and then.
That would be tampering.
That's not allowed. The rules. Right. That is not allowed. Whatever.
You won't see anybody. You also won't see anybody, you know, on campus at other schools or anything like that.
My grandma's phone is forbidden. You are not allowed to call her.
Right.
Or talk to her. Or my aunt.
That would be bad.
Or my teacher.
Correct.
Or my counselor. Or my dog. You're not allowed to talk to any of those people. I don't know what their numbers are.
Until December 4th. Then it's fine.
Yeah. And then it's just crazy how I came to this decision overnight and decided to commit somewhere December 5th.
I got a text from a random number that I didn't know when I looked up the area code and said, oh, this is the coach for this school.
Oh,
I'm going to go.
That's a Los Angeles area code. And it, oh, must be him. Yeah. Got it. I want to go there. Yeah. Give me a break. But in all seriousness, Auburn is not really dealing with that. And here's another update, right, from earlier today. Keanu Coates, is that how you pronounce it, in Alabama? The linebacker has decided to enter, he has filed, according to Pete Thamel, has filed paperwork to enter the NCAA transfer portal per his agents at the AP Sports Agency. He expects to have 2 seasons of eligibility remaining. And you're seeing this across college football right now from week 3.
Yeah.
All the way till now, and all the way until the portal officially opens, you've got guys deciding that they are leaving. And Hugh Freeze said this yesterday. He answered the question, again, same way he answered it a week ago when I asked it. He said, yeah, those conversations have already started. Like, they happen quite often. And Freeze admitted, and I thought this was interesting. He said, to be honest with you, I personally don't handle all of that. He said, I don't handle much of that at all. He said, I let our coaches handle that. I let our collective handle that, especially when the NIL stuff starts coming into play. He said, you know, I kind of let the organization handle it, because that's what this is an organization now, not a program. And he said, I let our staff handle that. And he said, now, I feel that our players have the understanding that they can come in and talk to me if they need to and need to discuss these things. And he said, we had two of them who wanted to come in and chat. And he said, that's fine. I'm going to shoot you straight. We're going to treat this like adults. Here we go. And he said he told them what the situation was. He didn't say who they were or what that was, but you get what that message was, right? And so, luckily for Auburn, like, you haven't had a whole lot of, oh, you're not going to play me? Okay, cool. I'm going to transfer. Oh, you're just now wanting to throw the football to me? Okay, I'm going to leave. Oh, I'm the best secondary running back in the SEC. You're not going to use me? Fine, I'll transfer. Or, oh, I'm a junior linebacker. You decide not to play me? Cool, I'm out. Anything like that. Like, you do have to give some credit to Auburn here, to Hugh Freeze and the staff for seemingly having it under control, at least on the outside looking in. And from the people that I've talked to, they aren't dealing with it as much as some other programs may be dealing with it.
And again, that's all that you can ask. We talked about it so much with Billy Napier in Florida, to where one of the biggest things that you heard everybody talk about was how he hadn't lost the locker room, right?
That's still true.
I think it's very much true, and I think it adds to it even more now following this past weekend with a win over LSU.
And two big recruits this week.
I mean, that's, again, commits. That speaks to itself, the fact that he has yet to lose the players. I feel like, despite the record, I don't think Hugh Freeze has lost the locker room, which still plays such a big factor in your week-by-week results.
I don't know if he's – I don't know. That's an interesting one, too, because he hasn't – as far as I know, he has not lost the locker room, but there is definitely a – just from what I've heard and what I know and what I've seen, there is a separation. There's a separation because – of the young wave that has come through, right? And Freeze talked about it, about the young guys that are playing. I mean, he was asked, hey, are you going to continue playing as many young guys as you can? And he said, we're just about playing them all. I mean, he said, we're almost playing as many as we can. I mean, look at what DeMarcus Riddick did this weekend as we kind of look into ULM a little bit more. I mean, look at what DeMarcus Riddick did. Hugh Freeze said, by quote, we got better when we started playing him. Auburn got better as a defense and as a football team when DeMarcus Riddick stepped on the field and started playing significant minutes. And you started seeing that all over the defensive side for sure, but you're starting to see it on the offensive side too, and maybe that's the movement with Walker White or whoever, you know, plays more at the secondary spot. I mean, that could be the only division in the locker room. But as far as I know, there hasn't been a ton of, screw this guy. He doesn't
right.
know what he's
like
doing.
Like outspoken
right.
individuals.
Right. And I think that comes with, hey, I intend to enter the transfer portal in a month. And the season's still going on.
Yeah.
And Auburn just hasn't had a whole lot of that.
They haven't. And again, that goes back to the entire staff. And I think it's honestly probably a good thing that Freeze doesn't have to deal with a bunch of that stuff, not because he shouldn't have to, because he talked about, again, where he feels like he has a good enough relationship with the players to where if there's an issue, come to me and we will talk about everything. But it's nice that he doesn't have to deal with that kind of worry in his day-to-day job.
I mean, he'll be the first one to tell you there's not enough hours in the day to do it. I mean,
no, he doesn't complain about that.
No, not him. Not any coach, really. I mean, They don't talk about how the job's gotten harder, how they just don't have time, the responsibilities are too much.
It's crazy. You hear the complaints about that, but the dollar sign's going up. There's no complaints about that.
No, just ask Kurt Cignetti in Indiana. He got paid. How about that? Paid him 8 years, $8 million a year to be the head football coach at Indiana.
At a basketball university.
At a basketball school.
That was $8 million a year to not get bought out by somebody else.
You better believe it. Ain't no doubt about it. That's an $8 million on average, I think. That's kind of varies. And he gets an extra $1 million every year he stays. So he has a $1 million a year retention bonus. So not bad, but you're absolutely right. Indiana said,
please don't leave. Please don't leave us.
You get that too here at Auburn Network, right? Every year that you stay, just a $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. They say if you leave, we will be nothing. We will crumble.
Right.
That's what they say.
I'm just passing the words that I hear. So
I was told that I have a lifetime contract here that it is unbreakable.
And every year the salary adds another comma.
Another comma and another zero. Yeah. I mean, that's what you get when you work for the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Speaking of which, to pay me, we got to pay the bills, and we got to let our advertisers do their thing. So we'll let them do that as we take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins, joined in the studio by Christian Griffin, who's with me every single Tuesday. You've got basketball tonight. Tell the people what's going on Lee Scott Sports Network.
Yeah, Tiger Country 104.5, the home of Lee Scott Academy basketball, taking on Horseshoe Bend tonight. The girls will
Does
tip off.
Bend?
We'll find out tonight. We will find out tonight. But the girls tip off
Bend
right around
break, right?
5:30.
Sorry.
You can promote it for me if you'd like to.
Sorry, I'm done.
I mean, this is Mr. Goins doing exactly what the slogan does. He's telling it like it is. He is holding nothing back today. I don't know what fired you up, but there was something in that rainy air today
know.
In Auburn,
yeah,
Opelika.
It's the fact that I had to get out of bed today. That's really what it was. It looks like it's maybe stopped raining on this side of town, but my gosh, what a nasty day outside.
It really
Continue.
Is. But Tiger Country 104.5, Horseshoe Bend tonight with Lee Scott. Girls tip off right around 5:30. Boys right around 7 if everything goes on schedule and goes as planned. Again, rainy outside, buckets of rain, hopefully buckets tonight inside of Sanford Gymnasium.
Wow.
That's fell onto that one for about 30 seconds before.
Wow.
So
that's what you get when you tune in to the Lee Scott Sports Network, is that just A-plus level commentary. So check that out tonight on Tiger Country 104.5. You look around, you've got the college football playoff rankings tonight. We talked about Purdue and Marquette going at it tonight.
Yeah.
That is Big Ten, Big East. That's big time. I mean, that's old school basketball right there, buddy. Purdue and Marquette, that's going to be a lot of fun. And again, Auburn fans should keep an eye out because you see Purdue coming up in just a couple of weeks. That's going to be in Birmingham near the end of December.
It is. It should be a really, really good game. Florida taking on Florida A&M.
Is there any more word on him?
I
have not seen anything else about it. Now, I have not gone out of my way to look, but I figure with that sort of a storyline and that,
you wouldn't have to search for it.
Exactly. They would tell you what's going on. And, I mean, I don't know. You can feel it, fear it, whatever. The longer that situation goes on, you just think that nothing is going to come from it. And I'm not saying that in a good way and in a bad way for either party. I mean, I don't know. It just kind of seems like it is what it is. I don't know. What a weird situation.
For him, you almost feel like silence is leaning towards what he is wanting,
mm-hmm.
right? Which,
yeah.
again, is not because of something he did or didn't do, you know. You're innocent until proven guilty, but just a really weird turnout and how everything is still, you feel like you have less answers now than you did in the beginning.
Yeah, and Florida seems to be treating it as if nothing happened, and until they find something that has proven him guilty, he's going to continue to coach at the University of Florida, which, I mean, good for them, I guess. I don't know.
Lipscomb also taking on the 9th-ranked Kentucky Wildcats. That'll be a really interesting game to tune into as well. Kentucky coming off that big win their last time out. But Lipscomb, a pretty solid team out of Nashville, look to try and serve a little bit of upset inside of Rupp Arena.
Could you say
tonight.
Kentucky's got the second-best win on the year? Beating Duke?
Yeah.
I mean, that was neutral site. That was a heck of a lot more neutral site than what Auburn had to do.
Very much so.
That game was in Atlanta, where Auburn went to Houston. So, that Kentucky team is really good. And Mark Pope's going to be a
really good
coach, man. I was
going to say, we talked
about
that, to where
he's going
to
be so good.
They got so overlooked with Pope coming in. But
Kentucky fans were mad. They were furious. They were like, who the heck is this guy? Why are we hiring some dude from a Mormon school to come in and coach Kentucky basketball? And all of a sudden, here he is. All is forgiven, coach. You're good. We were behind you the whole time. We wanted you here. We support you, Mark Pope, because you beat the Dukies. Good for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's because you win, everything is fine. But, you know, it's crazy that we're going to be mad that a former player is coming to coach our school.
And
I'm sure he has no ties, or yeah. I'm sure he doesn't have that extra oomph to try and
right.
to try and get over the hump.
And man, just listen to him talk and the way that he acts. I mean, dude, he cares about Kentucky. He cares about Kentucky. You could say he has at least shown his care for Kentucky more than John Calipari did in his final few seasons.
Or has at Arkansas.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, he was out there begging fans to come out and get to the games. I mean, he's out there trying. I mean, I think if you remember, for fans that remember when John Calipari got hired at Kentucky, he was the young stud, right? He was the young, successful dude. He was coming in, and he was a fiery little booger. He was a really, really elite coach who you did not want to go up against and was passionate about his job. Not saying he's not now. But he lost that over time, especially after they won the national championship. Oh, checks the calendar, 12 years ago
yeah.
at Kentucky. So he lost that as he went through the years. Mark Pope brought that fire back, and I think Kentucky's going to be a really, really good team this year.
Yeah, I do too. It feels like the college basketball world caught up to Kentucky over these past couple of years with Calipari, and now by no means have fallen, but have definitely taken a step back, and you can see the energy and the fire that Mark Pope brings. And again, a team that was overlooked in the preseason, but we both predicted it. They're going to make a lot of noise in the SEC this year.
I'm going to put you fully on the spot here. We got about 60 seconds. Ooh. Biggest surprise of the college football playoff rankings tonight. What is it? Biggest surprise. Based off results that we saw a week ago, teams that were off anything, biggest surprise that people will be talking about tonight and early tomorrow.
Is it bad that I want to say that Boise State's going to be out of the 12th spot?
Wow.
But I don't, because of what they've shown, I don't think that it will. But I don't know what a crazy thing it could possibly be with Oregon not looking great on the road and Ohio State winning. Although Ohio State lost to Oregon, what a crazy matchup that could possibly look like. I don't think they make that jump, but with the College Football Playoff Committee, they don't have to explain anything. So you never really know. If they need clicks, they'll go ahead and switch 1 and 2.
Yeah, we'll talk about all that tomorrow coming up 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.